are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Monday, October 29th, 2018. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, 11 dead in Pittsburgh, Jewish synagogue massacre. Meanwhile, the shooter inspired by the rights immigration demagoguery and Soros demonization, read anti-Semitism. Meanwhile, fascism takes power in Brazil, the fifth largest national economy in the world. Trump promises a trip to Pittsburgh. Local Jews and about 16,000 other people sign an open letter saying, don't come unless you denounce your white nationalism. The MAGA bomber apparently radicalized by the Trump election. Meanwhile, in other news, California's net neutrality law challenged by the DOJ and its partners at AT&T, Verizon, and Comcast. And, of course, the Pentagon sends extra troops to the U.S.-Mexican border to stop the imminent invasion that we are told is coming. All this and more on today's program. We had, you know, a slightly different show anticipated today, but we have ditched the interview that we were going to have because it would seem sort of ridiculous in light of the what happened this weekend. And I think people are quite aware of the news. A 46-year-old man, Robert Bowers, shot 11 congregants in a temple called, I think it's the Tree of Life, in Pittsburgh, a conservative temple, conservative in terms of its Jewish denomination, not necessarily its politics. The dead ranged in age from mid-50s to mid-90s. I think a woman who was a Holocaust survivor, actually. My understanding is it was Shabbat services, but also there may have been a bris at the time. Police officers also shot. The man was taken into custody. He had 21 guns registered in his name. He used an AR-15 style assault rifle and three handguns, according to authorities. He was loudly spewing murderous hatred and bigotry online, and as he went into the church, apparently said something to the effect of "all Jews must die." The guy's social media accounts, particularly a gab.com, had all sorts of white nationalist memes. He claimed Donald Trump's was not a white nationalist. He was a globalist. I'm hearing myself come back. Whoever's got that's got to turn it down. He claimed that Donald Trump was under the influence of Jews and was basically a figurehead, was not doing enough to stop the caravan that was coming of immigrants who represented who represented an invasionary force that was driven by Jews. Now, if that sounds familiar to you, that narrative that there is a caravan. In fact, this guy went in and on gab.com, he was repeatedly railing against the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, HIAS, I guess, which is a Jewish refugee advocacy group. There is a fairly robust tradition in of Jewish institutions that work on immigration for, I think, fairly obvious reasons. Hayes was founded in 1881. There have been various instances around the world where Jews have had to leave countries because of local repression. Hayes has partnered with the U.S. government in the past to help resettle refugees. They initially started as an organization that helped Jews and expanded their work to just refugees writ large. According to this guy, Bowers, he accused Hayes of helping transport members of the migrant caravans, supposedly showing the organizer a video that showed the organization's members working at the U.S.-Mexico border. He accused them of driving this invasion, and this is all on his Gab profile. He was Hayes. He accused the Hayes of working with the State Department. And Hayes has actually worked with the U.S. government, I imagine the State Department, to help resettle refugees as part of the refugee admissions program. Of course, many of those refugees are now, we're down to like literally 5,000 or 8,000 that we're going to allow into the country this year because of Donald Trump's so-called nationalism. But if the notion that this guy Bowers promotes, that the so-called migrant caravan that is walking through Mexico, perhaps to the United States. There are plenty of these caravans that we've had in the past. All you need to do is search caravans and Tucker Carlson, and you could see him reporting on these over the past couple of years. All the different invasions that we've had. And amazingly, we're still here. And I'm still speaking English. And we're not doing this through ham radio. This isn't a Red Dawn scenario. But apparently to this guy, it was. And if you're wondering, like, where could someone possibly get this idea? Or at the very least, they're not seeing this validated anywhere, are they? Like on Fox News?
I've gotten so many email from people who said, don't call it a caravan, call it an invasion.
Yes.
Is that fair?
Of course it is. It is a full-scale invasion by a hostile force, and it requires our president and our commander-in-chief to use any means necessary.
Pause it for 1 second. Now, when Michelle Malkin says a full-scale invasion, from, let's just assume that we're talking about this caravan here of, let's just assume there's 4,000 people, maybe less, but let's just assume it's 4,000. And we have heard in other clips from Seb Gorka saying that these are all, that many of them are military age men. They are walking on foot. many of them carrying their toddler or elementary school age kids. What does a full-scale invasion look like? Does it include by land, by sea, by air, long-range weapons, short-range weapons? Because these folks have none of it. Well, they have the land part. They're walking. They have no vehicles. But this is a full-scale invasion by a hostile force. A hostile force that wants to come here and work here, which is a weird thing to imagine that being the number one agenda of a hostile force. But that's what they are. It's a full-scale invasion, hostile force. Why wouldn't you go grab some arms to fight this, right? When has it been that the United States of America have been facing a full-scale invasion by a hostile force? Full-scale.
By a hostile force, and it requires our president and our commander-in-chief to use any means necessary to protect our sovereignty. The reason that I called my book Invasion 16 years ago is because of Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution. And people never talk about this anymore. The constitutional imperative to provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, the people who are already here. And if that means troops on the border, yes. The problem is, of course, that the troops, because of the Posse Comitatus Act, can only serve in an administrative support capacity. It's really a Band-Aid. And the underlying
solution... Is that the problem? That the troops at the border can't open fire on people? That's the problem. That's the problem that we have. That the troops can't fire. They can only function in an administrative function to these hostile invaders who are involved in a full-scale invasion. You see where this is going, folks? This is, incidentally... This is, Fox and Friends? This is the light show. This is the morning show.
Of course, is to finish the wall and to put more Border Patrol agents on the border. And ranchers and families have been calling for that for the 3 decades that I've been covering this issue.
Yes, 3 decades of just hyping and hyping this. And now we have a president who's fully on board with the idea that we're being involved in a full-scale invasion, supposedly, right? Supposedly. Where could this idea, though? So we have multiple sources, including some of the highest echelons of conservative thought and Republican media in this country are suggesting that we're suffering a full-scale invasion from a hostile force. But where would someone get the idea that this is maybe a function of the Jews? Well, I mean, certainly it lives in white nationalist lore. The John Birch Society has been saying this. But where in the popular culture could people get this notion? I got a piece here. This was written, a while ago, maybe a year or two ago, about white nationalism. And it's written by a guy named Eric Ward. He wrote this in the Public Eye magazine in the summer 2017 edition. I think he works at the Southern Poverty Law Center now, or he did then. And he's an African-American guy who, in the course of working on anti-racist activism, went undercover at a weekend in 1995 in a convention center in Seattle, which was the 6th Annual Preparedness Expo. And it's basically preparing people for political and economic collapse. And you could buy white nationalist classics like The Secret of the Federal Reserve in 52 and from 67, The Biological Jew. And he writes, despite its blood-curdling anti-black racism, at least some factions of the white nationalist movement saw me as a potential ally against their true arch enemy. Apparently went in as a black separatist, and he told the guys, like, I don't shake white people's hands. And this guy he was talking to was like, that's cool. They went to go hear Jack McLan, Lamb, who was a Phoenix cop who ran an organization called Police Against the New World Order, make a case for temporary alliances with the blacks, the Mexicans, the Orientals against the real enemy, the federal government controlled by an international conspiracy. He didn't have to say who ran this conspiracy because it was obvious to all in attendance. He goes on to write, if I had to give a basic definition of the movement, something I've been asked to do formally and informally by folks who have spent less time hanging out with Nazis than I have, my response today would not be much different than it was when I began to do this work nearly 30 years ago. American white nationalism, which emerged in the wake of the 1960s civil rights struggle and descends from white supremacism, is a revolutionary social movement committing to building a whites-only nation, and anti-Semitism forms its theoretical core. Now, why would that be? He writes, to recognize that anti-Semitism is not a sideshow to racism within white nationalist thought. This is particularly white nationalist thought, like Steve Bannon. It allows us to identify the fuel that white nationalist ideology uses to power its anti-black racism, contempt for other people of color, and its xenophobia, as well as the misogyny and other forms of hatred it holds dear. And how does it do this? What function does anti-Semitism serve? Well, one, it answers the question, how could a race of inferiors, that being basically people of color, unseated the power structure through organizing alone? For that matter, how could feminists and LGBTQ people have upended traditional gender relations? Muslims have won billions of converts to Islam. How do you explain the boundary crossing allure of hip hop, the election of a black president? It's some secret cabal, some mythological power that must be manipulating the social order behind the scenes. That's what the Jews do for the white nationalists. They give an excuse for why they are losing, because they have been stabbed in the back by people who have snuck into the power structure and are using all these other dupes as a way of controlling things. Jews function, he writes, for today's white nationalists as they often have for anti-Semites throughout the centuries, as the demons stirring an otherwise changing and heterogeneous pot of lesser evils. He writes that the second reason the white nationalist anti-Semitism must not be dismissed, at the bedrock of the movement is an explicit claim that Jews are a race of their own, and that their ostensible position as white folks in the U.S. represents the greatest trick the devil ever played. The Bible for generations of white nationalists is the Turner Diaries. You may remember that because that was basically the controlling, I guess, structure of everything. Not just Timothy McVeigh, but also Glenn Beck was operating under for years. And this is a dystopian novel by the white supremacist leader William Pierce, published under the pseudonym Andrew McDonald. And this is where a soldier in the white revolutionary army insists that trying to distinguish the good Jews from the bad ones is absurd, the way some of our thicker-skulled good old boys still insist on trying to separate the good ends from the rest of their race. He writes, contemporary anti-Semitism, then, does not just enable racism, it is also racism. For the white nationalist imaginary, Jews are a race, and the race that presents an existential threat to whiteness. Anyways, this is the thoughts of this guy from a theoretical standpoint, I guess, though also based upon his day-to-day research with these people. But where can we see this notion that Jews are pulling the strings. I mean, it's at least, you know, it's like, it's one thing that it's confined to these sort of John Birch pamphlets and Elders of the Protocol of Zion pamphlets that are out there purporting to show the Jews are trying to tear down great nations through immigration. But one couldn't see this trafficked, let's say, on a daily basis, except for, when was this? Last week?
Sure. Look, this is a criminal involvement on the part of these leftist groups.
It's pause it for 1 second. This is Lou Dobbs on Fox Business Network talking to this guy from the Judicial Watch, Chris Farrell, who apparently, you know, you should know, Fox has now said can't come on our network.
Sure. Look, this is a criminal involvement on the part of these leftist groups. It's highly organized, very elaborate, sophisticated operation. I have that from the highest levels of the Guatemalan government. They're investigating those groups criminally, and I strongly urge President Trump and Attorney General Sessions to do the same here. A lot of these folks also have affiliates who are getting money from the Soros-occupied State Department, and that is a very great concern. You want to start cutting money, start cutting money there.
Do you know? So, in other words, let's just review here. This guy has sources at the highest levels of the Guatemalan government who are telling him that this is a very sophisticated international cabal of people who are orchestrating this, what we were told by Michelle Malkin on the Light Show on Fox, was that we're dealing with a full-scale invasion with hostile intent. And the State Department's been infiltrated by this demonized George Soros, who was also incidentally, just coincidentally this week, targeted in a bombing attack, or would-be bombing attack. And this guy's out there promulgating this stuff. It's all part of the white nationalist formula. And this is what it's getting trafficked on a daily basis. And we hear, let's just listen to one more time here. We have, here is Hugh Hewitt. And this was what, Friday afternoon, I think it was. Friday afternoon. This is before the attack on the synagogue. Back when there was just 12 or 13 bombs. I think we're at the 13th now, but at the time I think it was 12. Sent to the leaders of the Democratic Party. Then some African-American congresspeople perceived as, you know, at the top leadership, I guess. Maxine Waters, I guess, part of the leadership. But then a couple other administrative figures and, of course, George Soros. And here is MSNBC on Meet the Press Daily, making it mostly like a he said, she said type of situation.
So I mean, a couple of things on this. Hold on.
Here's Stephanie Cutter with Hugh Hewitt.
A couple of things on this. In terms of what Jeff said, he never gets to the point where he follows the traditions and conventions of how you expect a president to act. I think it's more than that. He never does the right thing. Regardless of what the traditions and conventions are of being a president, he never does the right thing. He never takes the road. There are two former presidents that were targeted with pipe bombs. I've worked for both of those presidents. I can't imagine either one of them not calling and checking on someone, making sure they're okay, showing empathy and concern. We got none of that from this president. And Hugh, I appreciate you're trying to throw everybody into the same bucket, but that's an impossible thing to do. This president has incited violence. He has, you know, people at his rallies. He talks about punching people in the face. He talks, throws people out. You know, this is how he won the presidency, the politics of fear. There is no equivalent in the Democratic Party.
There is an equivalent. There's the man screaming at Mitch McConnell in the restaurant. There is Maxine Waters
screaming
encouraging people.
At a
which violates 18 U.S.C. 351. If we go back to the statute.
We can talk about that, but we're talking about the President of the United States. Are you saying you don't agree that this man has
one standard, incendiary behavior by any public official ought to be held to the
same standard. I'll make sure that nobody screams at a Democratic rally, lock him up.
No, I'm talking about the guy in McConnell's face. What did you think of that, Stephanie? Should he have been arrested under 18 U.S.C. 351?
For screaming at Mitch McConnell.
And banging on the table and throwing his food.
I think
I mean, you see what Hugh Hewitt's doing here? First of all, Hugh Hewitt doesn't even know the man's name. This man of great import who is sending a broader message to the entire... He doesn't even know his name. And he's playing this game... Get Stephanie Cutter to say that this guy should be arrested for this violation. Being rude to a senator. And the idea that this is being platformed in any way. Because we literally this week, the conversation they're having is about what the implications of platforming this at the highest level of the government does to lunatics out there. But let's hear Hugh Hewitt try and justify how there's some type of equivalency here.
Arrested under 18 U.S.C. 351.
For screaming at Mitch McConnell.
And banging on the table and throwing his food.
I think it's wholly inappropriate. I think that nobody should act that way. But I think you're right. Nobody should act that way. That is a constituent... or whatever you want to call him, not the President of the United States.
Susan Collins getting an envelope with rice in it.
Right, that's wrong.
It's everywhere.
But
I just want to say
right,
one rule.
But what
it's
do
everywhere.
You, who do you think incites that violence the most?
I do not blame the President at all.
You
not,
don't
not,
blame
not,
the President
not the
at
most.
All.
Everyone uses this rhetoric these days, especially
no,
on cable channels.
No,
yes, they do.
Not.
It's just absolutely garbage and BS. And someone like that comes on and just delivering that garbage and BS. Why do you let them on? Why do you let them on? Why do you let that be just like, this is really just about who can make the better debate? So with that backdrop, on Friday night, I was on Chris Hayes' program. And there's... So Friday night... with the backdrop of seeing someone like Hugh Hewitt on MSNBC making some type of equivalency between somebody upsetting Mitch McConnell's dinner by banging on his table or saying your food is bad or saying shame is literally someone. We don't even know the name. No one. I haven't heard the name. Is the equivalent of the president going on national television, talking about doing violent things, excusing violent things, seeing the entire Republican media apparatus talk about a caravan as being a full-scale invasion with military age males, with hostile intent. We're talking about families who are walking on foot a month away from the United States, creating the sense that we are under siege. And then I was on MSNBC with Barbara Boxer, who is always the favorite of mine, of the two California senators, I should say. She had this to say, and I hopped on my hobby horse about the problem being much more problematic, much larger than Donald Trump play the tape.
You know, he and I are about the same age. I'm a little older, but we're about the same vintage. And we lived through three assassinations of leaders, John F. Kennedy, Bobby Kennedy, and Martin Luther King. And to think that his response to this is to double down on going after the press, not to look at the people and say, you know what, I get heated sometimes. If my rhetoric had anything to do with it, we are dealing with someone who is a bully inside and out, has no compassion, didn't even mention the names of two former presidents. We've only had 45. And this bomber who did the act, let's be clear, he did the act, the bomber did. The roadmap was the president of the United States and everyone that he singled out for hatred. So the politics of hatred, when practiced by a president, has resulted in a nightmare for our nation. And we have a president who has to be checked and balanced in this next election.
Pause it for 1 second. And I agreed with everything she said there about Donald Trump. But the issue that I took was that that's not nearly an exhaustive list of the people who are responsible for this. Continue.
This next election.
Sam.
Yeah, I mean, even if someone wanted to make the bizarre claim that there was no relationship between what Donald Trump has been doing and what this guy did, Donald Trump's actions after the fact, to not even call the former president of the United States, to not even call the former secretary of state, to not even to say, like, we are committed to protecting you people, is basically sending the message to the other potential bombers out there, hey, you know, I don't blame you. I can understand why you would do this. A, and B, I'm at the point, like, where the outrage about Donald Trump is useless.
Mm-hmm.
There are people who have enabled him, who continue to enable him for their own political and, frankly, money profit. And those people are members of the Republican Party. They are the leadership of the Republican Party.
And the conservative establishment and the conservative media.
And the conservative establishment, they heard when Donald Trump said, hey, if you beat up that protester, I'll cover your lawsuit. I mean, they still rallied behind this guy. Mitch McConnell, Paul Ryan, every other Republican leadership should have to answer more than he does. They need to come up and deal with
it. Yeah, what do you think of that, Senator?
Well, absolutely. That's why we are having an election.
Right.
It's a midterm. It's not an election where Donald Trump is physically on the ballot, but his style of politics, the politics of fear and hate, and we see the result of that, that is on the ballot. And I have to say this. There are many issues that are going to impact people. This is one of them. We have to look deeper inside the Republican Party. Not only are they enablers, but they want to take away things from the people of America, their Social Security, their Medicare, their health care. We are not going to forget about that. This man must be checked. And yes, it all lies with the House and Senate leadership. We need to take back both the House and the Senate to restore sanity to this country, to restore hope for this country.
Well, I mean, first off, with all due respect to the former senator, that will not restore sanity in this country.
I don't agree with you, sir.
Okay, that's fine. But the Democrats can take back the House. But just like when Barack Obama thought that this would break the fever, this is not going to break the fever. The establishment of this country, we all know who they are. They sit in seats in these rooms as well. They need to start holding the Republican leadership to account, not just implore people to go and vote. This isn't a question of people going voting. You saw the assessments of those people in line at the rally. They thought it was, you know, Bernie Sanders.
What I'm talking about there is they had just played a clip of, and I think we have this, of what the people in line think about these bombers. They think that these bombers are, and we'll play it in a bit later, but they think that Barack Obama sent it to himself. And my point was not that we shouldn't go out and vote, but that we're on MSNBC, on Chris Hayes' program, and the percentage of people who are watching this program who are planning not to vote is somewhere between 0% and immeasurably small. Everyone watching Chris Hayes is going to vote. I would say it's arguable whether or not a majority of people a week before the election who are watching Chris Hayes have already voted. They're the first persons in line to early voting. The problem was earlier in the day in that studio, Hugh Hewitt was allowed to come and spew his false equivalency that Paul Ryan can hide out wherever he's hiding out and say, this is real reprehensible. I don't know how this happened. And Mitch McConnell can be there. Or that Dianne Feinstein is not getting the message from Barbara Boxer that, hey, you should be calling out every one of the members of the Senate right now for not standing up and saying, we're done. We're not showing up to vote on anything. Continue.
The assessments of those people in line at the rally, they thought it was, you know, Bernie Sanders, or they thought that Barack Obama had mailed this to themselves. The reporters in this country, the establishment media figures who even entertained the notion of some type of false equivalency
or
between upsetting Mitch McConnell at a restaurant, some nameless person protesting at a restaurant, versus the president of the United States not even telling people of this country, you shouldn't have done this.
Right.
That nobody should do this. We are beyond, I mean, the election is one thing, but make no mistake about it, sanity will not return if the Democrats take the House or the Senate.
Let me say
this.
The election
isn't one thing. The election is the thing. You know, you can write your columns, and I used to be a reporter, and I love to write. You can go on television. The people have the power. You got to take away the power from the Mitch McConnells,
yes,
from the Paul Ryans, from the Dean Hellers, and I could go on. And the only way to do that is the vote, because all this outrage doesn't mean anything if the same people are in power.
I will say this. My own take on this is that it's necessary but not sufficient, right?
It's necessary but not sufficient. He's correct. But the bottom line is, it's not just a question. First off, it's not just a question of taking away the power from these Republicans, because there's no way to take away all their power. This is a cultural problem. And to the extent that there's anything that any of us sitting in that room or on that television on MSNBC can do to diminish the power of Donald Trump, it is to take our access for the highest levels of our government and tell them that they are being shameful. Now, none of those people are going to listen to me. Of the three of us sitting on that studio, none of them are going to listen to me. But they may listen to a former senator. So, with all due respect to Barbara Boxer, of whom I have great admiration, but whatever relationships, whatever she got as a senator, where it's like, you know, well, my good colleague from so-and-so or whatnot. Do you think that this is just about electing a Democratic Congress? And I agree. Every single person in the sound of my voice should vote. And again, I would be willing to bet that 99% of them are. But the elite of this country have to step up and start holding their fellow elite to account, even if it means they won't be able to lobby other senators. They won't be able to go to the same parties. They won't be held in the same esteem. They have to expend some of their cachet, their social cachet, for the betterment of the country. Stop clinging on to this sort of... The New York Times posted a headline. Do we have a copy of that headline? On that day, on Friday, they were sent pipe bombs. Hear what they've said about Trump. A look at the contentious words between the president and some of his most outspoken critics. Now, they changed that headline to, here's what they've said about Trump and what Trump said about them. But Sam Cedar can sit here and say, hey, that's BS. It doesn't matter what these people have said about Donald Trump in the course of politics. None of it was eliminationist. None of it justifies getting sent a pipe bomb in the mail. Sometimes when you frame certain things in that way, it communicates a certain perspective that it legitimizes certain things. Sam Cedar can talk about this, and guess who cares? No one. I mean, I like to think maybe you people care, but if Barbara Boxer says, on national television, I call out the New York Times right now. This is irresponsible. and they've got to behave better. That makes a difference. There is no one, again, with all due respect to Senator Boxer, there is no one who is watching Chris Hayes on a Friday night who her exhortations to vote are going to make a difference. They're already voting. If anybody knows her name, they're voting. And so the bottom line is use the assets you have instead of telling people that is all that is necessary is voting. It may be the only thing they can do in the next 10 days. And that's fine. But you should do what you can do, which is far more than just voting. It is actually bringing some of your social assets to bear on what is an increasingly dangerous situation. They're not doing it.
You need to disrupt norms to save norms. We keep saying that.
Yeah. They also ran that headline where they referred to Bolsonaro as a divisive populist, which, like, you would think that getting literal bombs sent in the mail to mainstream media outlets would make them think maybe these people don't deserve equal time, but
yeah, it's absurd. But
and the false equivalency is maddening.
It's maddening. And it is maddening to see the people who really have the ability. I mean, really, let's face it. There's no amount of, yes, it would be great if all the New York Times subscribers on next Monday decided to send an email to the Times. I'm canceling my subscriptions because of your false equivalency, but that's not going to happen. But the ability for people like Senator Boxer, and I'm not calling her out in particular, it just so happens that we had this conversation, but there's a lot more of them. Call out people on that network and say, why are you hosting shows to promote false equivalency? I mean, imagine for a moment if a former senator was watching, let's say, the Sunday version of Meet the Press. And they were aware of Eric Erickson, who was the guy who got famous by calling Chief Justice Souter a goat effer. Yeah, that was the way that he got his claim to fame. And he has been engaged in a list of conspiracy peddling that it's almost hard for me to actually enumerate. I have a piece here somewhere about it, but let's listen to what he has to say.
There he is on your site.
Mm-hmm.
Here he is. This is on Chuck Todd's Meet the Press. They have introduced Eric Erickson to talk about the dangers of conspiracy theories.
Eric, I'm curious. So you've had to deal with conspiracy theories on your site.
Mm-hmm.
You've been sometimes people get mad at you thinking right. You help traffic these conspiracy theories. And I know that there are others that are.
Pause it. Sometimes people think that you like just come out and say it. You've trafficked these. You have trafficked in these. Good.
But whose job is it to get rid of some of this stuff? Whose job is it to purge this stuff? Whose job is it to educate Americans to facts?
I think we all have an obligation here. I mean, just let me address conservatives for a minute. Last week, you had a lot of people pushing the maybe this bomber
not,
was...
Rush Limbaugh was pushing it, Eric.
You had a lot of people who were pushing this theory. Now we know the facts. Now we know the facts, and yet there are still people pushing this. I got to tell you...
Pause it. So what Eric is saying is like, look, the first reaction... It's perfectly legitimate to have a wild conspiracy theory. I mean, for instance, like the caravan. This is a tweet. Now, I didn't see this one because Eric Erickson blocked me years ago. But this was from a week ago. It's not a coincidence that this caravan to the south of us is happening 2 weeks before our federal elections. If you want to bring Eric Erickson on to your television program, ask him what he means by this. What does that mean? It's not a coincidence. Is he suggesting that these Guatemalans and Hondurans who started this caravan weeks and weeks ago and could not make it to the United States until weeks after the election. I mean, that they this was like some type of, they timed this out, or did someone else have this idea? Did someone else who had knowledge of our election say, we've got to gin this up down there, we'll get this caravan going? I mean, it would be irresponsible not to speculate. The idea that it could be a coincidence, it's not a coincidence. I don't believe in coincidences. Or what about this? Eric Erickson, note to reporters. A growing body of blogs are posting that Kavanaugh's mother presided over the foreclosure of Christine Blasey Ford's childhood home, or at a minimum, her parents' home. I encourage you to honestly vet this, as it could explain motive or fuel conspiracy. Oh, I wonder how people could hear about that conspiracy. Oh, you just told it to us. Well, I'm sure all the people on those blogs, those right-wing blogs, will read what the Washington Post has to say about that. Or when it turns out that there was actually, two different people named Ford who were judges. I'm sure Eric Erickson addressed that on his Twitter feed.
He deleted those tweets.
Oh, did he? Huh. Wow. David Hogg contradicts himself in two separate interviews about whether he was at school during the shooting. And no, this isn't a fake news gateway pundit BS story. It's actually an Eric Erickson Red State BS story. Now, maybe it's unfair to look back a matter of months where there's three distinct episodes where Eric Erickson has peddled in conspiracy theories. Or maybe there's this. If reporters really cared about children, they'd also be yelling at Planned Parenthood asking why they're selling baby body parts and turning a blind eye to child victims of sex trafficking. Yeah, I'm serious. Look at it. Now, granted, that was all the way back in June of 2018. That's all the way back almost 5 months ago.
So it had been fully debunked for a year and a half versus 2 years?
Right. Okay, I'm sorry. Let's get back to him on Meet the Press talking about how the right needs to give up their conspiracy theories after they've been debunked.
Theory. Now we know the facts. Now we know the facts. And yet there are still people pushing this. I got to tell you that from my perspective, when we know all the facts now about the guy last week and you're still pushing this theory, you're at war with the truth. And if you're a conservative who's at war with the truth, you're not really being conservative.
Pause it. To be conservative, in other words, means you put out a conspiracy theory, no matter how insane it is, based on no facts. No facts. Right? Because it's not true. So it couldn't have been based on facts. It was based on conjecture and sloppy, I don't know, fictionalizing.
That's all fair play.
That's conservative. But once someone in the mainstream media presents the facts in a way that I believe them, then after that, it's not conservative, even though every single conservative outlet will carry it.
Wait, this is the new dispute in conservatism?
Apparently.
Do you do reckless conspiracy theories forever? Or do you stop at some point when it becomes like just embarrassingly
obvious? I am willing to bet.
That's the big division.
I am willing to bet. I don't have the time to do this. But over the course of Eric Erickson's radio and print career, that he has talked about Vince Foster. Because certainly his idol, Rush Limbaugh, has. And that was disproven 30-some-odd years ago, 20-some-odd years ago. Any more to this? All right, let's listen to more of this. Because this is the part where Chuck Todd says, hey, I don't know why we invited you on the show.
You're at war with the truth. And if you're a conservative who's at war with the truth, you're not really being conservative.
Rush Limbaugh was questioning the stickers on the van.
Across the board, we saw a bunch of conservatives doing this. Now we know the facts. The question is,
I will never criticize
the problem is in this situation, we have a lot of people who no longer trust the media. They don't trust institutions. They don't trust their neighbor. We've gone inward. Unfortunately, I do think it's going to be an external threat that brings us together. There is nothing left in this country that unifies us as a whole. We all have our own different media outlets. We have our social media outlets. We have our people we engage with.
And remember, this is the guy. This is the guy who pushed a conspiracy theory and said, oh, the media that my audience doesn't believe, they should be the ones who vet it. Talk about a disingenuous F. I mean, give me a break. And if the elite in this country do not at least use their elite status to put pressure on these other elites to clamp down on this, guess what? It ain't happening. Bottom line, it ain't happening. All right, we got to take a break, headed to the fun half. You know, just a, it's ugly, folks. And, you know, there's no reason to believe. If we're lucky, the Democrats take the House. Super lucky they take the House and the Senate. But there's no reason to believe they're going to stop this. I mean, usually, and this is why the Department of Homeland Security in 2009 leaked a report that was a warning of a rise in right-wing extremist activity. And conservatives attacked the report and made the Obama administration basically quash it. And now under Trump, of course, they don't even investigate these guys. They pulled like all the FBI resources. But usually during a Republican administration, this stuff dies down. But the level in which Donald Trump has promoted this stuff, and more importantly, the willingness for all the supposed controls that exist for a guy like this have basically waved it all in. There was a lot of people who thought like, oh, well, Trump is a nightmare, but they'll control him. And to the extent that they'll control him, yeah, maybe insofar as like we're still going to get tax cuts. But this stuff that is, are we going to go against his electoral base? No, that's our base, too. We're going to promote it.
They learned.
In fact,
they learned.
This is the only thing that could save the Senate. This is the only thing that could save the House. If we gin up this notion that we're under invasion, we're about to be invaded. And our dupes are going to believe it. We're going to get invaded. Yeah, maybe we'll deal with the problems of that later. You know, that people think we're going to get invaded.
Later is now.
Yeah.
They've been doing this shit for years.
And now it's
coming home to roost.
And if you're not calling it out and you're in a position to call it out that it makes a difference. I mean, we can all sit here and rail against it all day. But if you're in a position where you're calling it out would make a news story and you're not doing that, you're the one who's dropping the ball. Not the 0.0001% of people who are watching Chris Hayes and not voting. You.
It just seems so condescending, the vote thing, because what it feels like to me is like, you know, in an emergency and you have children, you want to give them a task that they can focus on to sort of give them something to do and not worry about. That's what it feels like they're giving. Just vote. And then we got the rest of it. Right.
Right.
It feels like she's kind of delusional there.
Well, I understand that she's out there and thinking that her message has to be get people to vote. But I'm sorry. Like, you need to step back and get focus on what your context is and what value you bring to this. I mean, this is, you know, the same thing about I've had this conversation with some of the you know, people like that about, you know, the David Frums. Great. I'm glad David Frum is going to pull the lever for a Democratic congressperson. But what army is he bringing? Who cares?
None, and he helps set all this context. And, of course, none, right? Who cares? But at the brisk of...
And I mean that literally. Like, who? Like, who is...
Democrats who read the Atlantic Monthly.
Yeah.
As literally who cares what David Frum has to say.
But do they actually care? Like, in other words, like, if there was an absence of what Frum would do, would that change their perspective on this at all?
No, it would just give them that, like, little moment of, oh, at least there's some...
It's a validating hit to
that's what I'm saying.
Anxiety.
Right. If anything...
It's a bedtime story.
If anything,
right,
it's
a bedtime story.
Yeah. And maybe the problem is that they shouldn't be going to sleep. Maybe they should be up all night with anxiety until they come to the realization that we need to do something, that it's not enough that the David Frums are coming to our side. And by the David Frums, I mean the David Frum.
The David Frum and the other...
There's four other ones.
Guy who's on TV.
There's
like
four
two
others.
Former consultants who've parlayed into great cabled gigs.
Right. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah, good for them. Very well played.
You're not even going to win like a local councilman election with that swing that you've created.
No. No, you're not. But I do think, you know, if you look at the pipe bombings and Bolsonaro, fever's going to break.
There you go.
Now when he starts ethnically cleansing leftists and LGBTQ people have to flee to the border, they'll realize that this just isn't going to work in the 21st century economy.
When he starts torching the Amazon to get after those indigenous people, that's really when people are going to sit up and be like, you know what?
But
knock it off.
This isn't who we are. This isn't what Brazil wants to be. It's not who I want to be. I don't want to be an unemployed pizza delivery guy putting pipe bombs in the mail, George Soros. This isn't who I am.
All right,
like that lesbian I work for. Fever broke.
Jesus.
Wait, you're doing a bris?
I mean,
maybe
nice.
Instead of shooting all of you, I can learn about your customs.
It'd be nice if the world worked that way.
Fever's going to break. Well, I think Obama's particularly terrifying because he's so intelligent. And there is something so...
There's an argument that when Obama goes and makes these speeches, that he's actually going to motivate people to vote.
Oh, no. He has to make these speeches. I'm thinking of, I think, the sincere belief that maybe he used to have. I don't get the sense that he still has this belief, but the sincere belief that he used to have of fear was going to break. I think now he actually is, in his own way, being like, this is actually pretty fucking bad.
Right. Ideology is a powerful thing.
Yeah, so is being a black guy.
All right, quick break, head into the fun half. You can support this program becoming a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Don't forget justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Tomorrow, Michael, on the Michael Brooks Show.
Big Waz, my fellow woke bro and I, he's going to join us from L.A., and then Harvey Kay's in studio, Thomas Paine, History of the Democratic Party. We're talking about what's happening in Brazil, and then what's really exciting is actually in Vermont, Bernie Sanders and Yanis Varoufakis later this month, or later in November, are launching an international left project to counteract the right. So we're going to talk about that. And there's also a big announcement that we're making tomorrow, so be ready.
Jamie?
Yeah, so today we just released for our patrons a little comic relief in the form of a Real Maoist Hours. This segment is normally called Real Tanky Hours. We kind of plumb the depths of the dumb, far-left internet, but this one's the Real Maoist Hours. Maybe it's real, maybe it's not, but we found a leaked document for a plan for a protracted people's war in the Florida Everglades, so we do a little reading of that. And dropping on Wednesday, we have a very special Halloween episode with the Lit Crit guy about gothic Marxism, horror movies, and how the left can use the gothic for our own liberatory ends.
Matt.
A literary hangover still on that Pequot War / Mystic Massacre episode that I did solo. I got a really good review of it. She said it was very excellent. It's my mom. She's listening to my podcast. So
congratulations.
And then she's going to...
where it starts.
Her and my dad are going to listen to it together, apparently. So shout out to them. And check it out, patreon.com/literary hangover.
There you go. Matt, bringing families together. All right, folks, quick break. We'll see you in the fun half.